The time of 8 plus a little change having arrived. We're going to call the Committee on Taxes to order and another snowy day. So I want to thank members for getting here and also the testifiers who have had to travel to get here this morning. Appreciate that very much. We do not have a quorum, but I think we're going to get going. Representative Lean has House File 587. We'll do the proper motions when we do get a quorum, and he'll also have an amendment. We'll deal with that at the time. But Representative Lean, welcome to your committee, and if you would begin your presentation.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I appreciate you hearing my bill today. House File 587. This bill would allow the two medical cannabis companies in Minnesota to deduct their business expenses when calculating state income taxes. Unlike other businesses, these two medical cannabis companies are not allowed to deduct business expenses when calculating income taxes. This is because of federal tax law that Minnesota does conform to. As a result, these businesses are paying effective tax rates around 70%. Members, there should be a handout in your bill packet illustrating the additional cost of doing businesses for these companies because of their inability to deduct those expenses. By allowing the state income tax deductions, House File 587 would make medical cannabis more affordable for patients who are already in the program. Section 1 of the bill pertains to individual income taxes. Section 2 of the bill pertains to corporate income taxes. And it does not look like we have a quorum yet. So at this time, Mr. Chair, I will allow Amber Shimpa, CFO for Minnesota Medical Solutions, to provide some additional comments.
Thank you very much, Representative Lean. Ms. Shimpa, if you would introduce yourself and please begin your testimony.
Thank you and good morning. Thank you for providing me the opportunity to offer this testimony in support of House File 587. My name is Amber Shimpa. I am the Chief Financial Officer of Minnesota Medical Solutions, one of the two medical cannabis manufacturers in the state of Minnesota. My professional background is in banking, and I have been involved in all aspects of financial matters for MinMed, including taxation and audit since its inception. Minnesota Medical Solutions is proud to see the Minnesota Medical Cannabis Program continue to grow, and we are very encouraged by the number of chronic pain patients who can reduce or discontinue use of dangerous and addictive opioid medications by switching to cannabis-based medications. But cost remains a top concern relayed by our patients across the state, and for many Minnesotans, our medications simply are too expensive. Despite our best efforts to make them more affordable through competitive, compassionate discounts and loyalty programs. The reasons for the high costs are many, including the fact that health insurance does not cover the cost of medical cannabis. Therefore, all patients must cover the full cost of these products out of pocket. Moreover, while Minnesota's medical program is growing, the relatively low number of enrolled patients makes it difficult for operators to achieve economies of scale in production. It should be noted that while the medical cannabis manufacturers are finally approaching break-even, both have suffered substantial cumulative losses since inception. But there is another layer to the cost equation, the very unusual tax treatment of medical cannabis manufacturers in Minnesota. IRC Section 280E, a federal tax provision, prevents cannabis companies from deducting expenses from their income, except for those considered cost of goods sold. Thus, we are not able to deduct many of the standard business expenses that those in every other industry can, like marketing, rent, and certain payroll expenses. The Minnesota Tax Code mandates the same exclusion, and this dramatically drives up our combined state and federal taxation rates. In fact, as Representative mentioned, our effective tax rate is over 70%. Let me repeat that. Our effective tax rate is over 70%. This is by far the highest tax rate that any Minnesota corporation pays, and enough to cause just about any business to shut its doors. As can be expected, we unfortunately are forced to pass the exorbitant cost of these taxes onto our patients, making Minnesota's medical cannabis prices among the highest in the nation. While the Minnesota legislature cannot change federal tax law, it does have the authority to amend state tax law. We are therefore hopeful that a relatively straightforward change in Minnesota law will allow us to deduct standard business expenses from our Minnesota state corporate taxes, resulting in substantial savings for the company. And simply put, savings on the tax bill would translate to savings for our patients. To be clear, we are not asking for special treatment, just standard treatment as a state-licensed legal business operating in the state of Minnesota. We are not asking you to set a precedent here of being the first state to enact tax fairness for their medical cannabis businesses. Other states that allow for the medicinal use of cannabis have taken this step, and we are hopeful that as more states tackle this issue, there will eventually be change to the federal tax code. And I'd like to make just one additional comment. Medical cannabis can be part of the solution to opioids. Chronic pain was added as a qualifying condition in August of 2016, and since then we've served thousands of pain patients from all across the state seeking an alternative to the addictive and dangerous opioids they are using. Pain patients are very aware of the risks they take by using highly addictive medications, but they often had no alternatives until now. As I said earlier, we are encouraged by the number of chronic pain patients who have come to MnMed seeking an opioid alternative. About two-thirds of our pain patients have either reduced their opioid medication use significantly or even stopped altogether. Passage of House File 587, which would help us reduce costs for our patients, would be a major step toward forward in addressing the scourge of opioid addiction. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I would also like to thank Representative Lean for introducing this bill and for the representatives that have signed on the bill as co-authors. At this time, I'd be happy to answer any questions regarding 280E.
Ms. Shinfa, thank you so much. At this time, I want to suspend consideration of House File 587 just for a minute because we do have now a quorum, and I'd like to do a little housekeeping. So we do have the Tuesday, February 19, 2019 minutes. And Representative Les Lagarde moves approval of the February 19, 2019 minutes. Any discussion on those? Seeing none, I'm going to call for the vote for the approval of the February 19, 2019 minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The minutes are approved. At this time, Representative Lean, would you like to move House File 587?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I do move House File 587 to be considered for inclusion in the division's omnibus bill.
And Representative Lean, you also have an A1 amendment. Would you like to move that at this time?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do move the A1 amendment. And this amendment, it was brought forward actually by the revisor's office. They caught the issue here, and it's basically allowing this tax deduction when these two businesses are considering their alternative minimum tax incomes.
Very
good.
You can
take advantage of the deduction.
Very good. So Representative Lee moves the A1 amendment. Any further discussion on the A1 amendment? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion does prevail. The A1 amendment is adopted. Thank you. So at this time, members, any questions for Ms. Shinfa? See none?
Nope.
I'm sorry, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had mentioned that there was going to be a sizable savings that you could pass along to your customers. Could you share with us what that is, and so I can kind of get an idea for how much we're looking at here?
Ms. Shinfa.
Thank you, Representative. I don't have specifics on what the amount of savings would be, but I can tell you that right now we provide loyalty discounts and compassionate discounts to all of our patients to help alleviate the burden of the cost. And the savings to the company overall is upwards of multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars, which you can imagine would dramatically be able to impact how we price our medications to patients on a going forward basis. It would absolutely impact the pricing in a positive way for our patients.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions? If not, Ms. Shinfa, thank you so much. Representative Lean, do you have another testifier? Good morning. If you'd please state your name for the committee and begin your testimony.
Good morning. First, my apologies for being late. I underestimated the
movement on the freeway this morning, so my apologies to the committee. My name is Corey Parnell. I am CEO of Beckerman Grafstrom Mayer, which is a CPA firm in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And first, I'd like to say how I got involved with Vireo Health is back in 2015 when they were first became licensed. I met one of their patients, which was a 12-year-old girl that had epilepsy, and just saw the change impact on her life that this medication made. So our firm at that time decided that we would become involved with medical cannabis company. And then to further just give a little background in regards of how this 280E code came around in 1981, the IRS went to court against a drug dealer in which the drug dealer prevailed and was allowed to deduct like home office expense, car allowance, things of that nature. So then in 1982, Congress passed statute 280E, which basically said the only thing you can deduct is your cost of goods sold. So that's how the statute came about in regards of the impact or what it means to drug dealers. So in this particular case, what it means to companies like Vireo Health is a Walmart would pay tax on their gross profit, so their revenue less their cost of their merchandise, and it would not be able to deduct their store rent, their employees, their G&A cost. So as you probably can imagine, probably Walmart would not exist today under that guidance of that statute. So I think all we're asking this committee to do is to get their state tax statute in alignment with the state licensing and therefore allowing them to take their federal tax income or loss and adjust it for other ordinary business deductions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very, very good. Any questions for Mr. Parnell? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Lean, do you have any other further testifiers?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
So is there anyone in the audience right now that would like to testify for or against House File 587? Seeing none, members, any further questions for Representative Lean on House File 587? Not. Representative Lean, closing comments?
Mr. Chair, members, I appreciate you hearing the bill today. Thank you.
Representative Lean renews his motion to lay over House File 587 as amended for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. So thank you very much. Next, we have House File 1034, and I saw Representative Pryor made it through the snow. Members, do we have someone that would move House File 1034? Representative Joaquim will move House File 1034 for possible inclusion into the House Omnibus Bill. And there is an A2 amendment. Representative Joaquim, would you move the A2 amendment? Representative Joaquim moves the A2 amendment. And Mr. Williams, or would you want to talk about that amendment quickly? It looks like it's got a little bit more than just some of them that we do here. So,
Mr. Chair and members, so the A2 amendment, there's sort of two changes, I would say. The first is for the second tax credit for, or it's actually the first tax credit for facilities. It's the third tax credit for providers. It essentially, the bill allows a tax credit based on the number of kids that are sort of meet in certain categories, so either they're homeless, in foster care, or in need of child protective services. So the amendment would add to that list of children that qualify for the credit, children that receive a benefit through the Child Care Assistance Program or an Early Learning Scholarship. It also would add children who's had a parent younger than 21 who's pursuing a high school degree or course of study for a high school equivalency test. And the amendment additionally amends subdivision 6 of the bill and makes all three credits in the bill refundable. In the base bill, only the credits under subdivision 2 or 3 for professionals and child care providers are refundable. So this would just make the first credit for people who make payments to a qualifying facility refundable as well.
So any discussion on the A2 amendment? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the A2 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. So, Representative Pryor, just for members here, we have a number of tax-related items in this bill. There are also other items dealing with child care and so forth. We always in taxes have allowed some latitude, but I do not want a Health and Human Services Committee debate today. So I know we're going to talk about other things, but try to focus as best we can on the tax provisions. Representative Davids.
I support our good chairman.
Thank you very much. So with that, Representative Pryor, if you would begin. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the Tax Committee, for hearing my bill this morning and for making it here, and for my testifiers also for making it here. I really appreciate that. And what I'd like to do is just give a brief introduction and then ask our nonpartisan staff to do a walkthrough in detail of the bill so that everyone can understand the tax provisions of it. So I'll begin by saying the child care crisis in Minnesota is something we hear a lot about in hearings, in the media, and in our districts at the door. It's leaving parents and employers with nowhere to turn. The legislature has developed has devoted a significant amount of time to its causes and possible solutions over the past several years, with the House Subcommittee on Child Care Access and Affordability and a bipartisan bicameral task force on child care, plus a OLA report on the nature of early childhood funding and programs in our state. There is no one solution to the child care crisis. It's going to take different approaches to fix. Both the public and private sectors have roles to play. In the early childhood division, we spent a lot of time on this issue of high quality childhood education. We do this because of the undisputed research showing that one of the best investments we can make is in giving our youngest children the best start possible. As a society, we can reap benefits of up to $16 for every $1 invested in getting our most vulnerable children access to high-quality early education as soon as possible. And, you know, let me just digress for a second. And even this amendment, we're talking about homeless kids, kids that are in at-risk families, and that's who we're talking about. And they're the ones that are benefiting most from high-quality child care. 90% of the brain is developed by age 5 and 80% by age 3. The earliest years are absolutely critical for children now and for the adults they'll become. We should not distinguish between high-quality child care and quality education for children 0 to 5, for they are one in the same. All parents who want it should be able to access high-quality child care, but that care and education doesn't exist without a strong early childhood workforce. The bill before you seeks to address and incentivize affordability, quality, and availability of high-quality child care. The bill ties all credits to the Parent Aware, Minnesota's early childhood quality rating and improvement system. We want to encourage more providers to earn ratings and to increase or maintain their ratings over time. This package of TAC credits would be available to the following: parents, credits to help offset tuition expenses, child care professionals, teachers, directors, family child care providers. These credits are linked to individual levels of educational attainment and employment in a licensed and rated program. And then finally, child care owners and operators. And these credits are linked to the number of higher risk children served in a program. increasing this with the star rating. This bill is modeled after a package successfully implemented in Louisiana, and South Carolina and Nebraska have also followed suit. Colorado has a similar bill in its legislature right now. So this is one of those situations where Louisiana is leading the way. This bill is modeled after a package. The National Governors Association recently worked with Minnesota on a policy strategy to bolster our early care and education workforce, and a package of credits like this was its number one recommendation. The National Governors Association noted that this strategy raises base pay, rewards quality, and rewards education. Add to that increased affordability for parents and an increased certainty for employers, and it's a formidable approach. Claire Sanford from the Minnesota Child Care Association is here to provide additional information about this approach and its results, but I think first hearing from nonpartisan staff walking through the bill may be appropriate. Mr. Chair.
Very good. Mr. Williams, would you give us the details on the various credit and tax provisions?
Mr. Chair and members, I'll start by walking through the three credits that are established by the bill. The first is a credit for payments made on behalf of a dependent child to a child care facility. The amount of the credit depends on the parent-aware star rating of that facility, so it ranges from up to $500 for one child to $1,050 for one child, and then the percentage of payments made to the facility also scales depending on the facility's child care or parent-aware rating.
Mr. Williams, I can just stop you very quickly. Members, you do have a revenue estimate that kind of details that in your packet, so might be easier to follow along also. So thank you. Please proceed, Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair and members, the second credit is credit for child care professionals. So this is essentially for individuals employed in a child care facility. I am less familiar with the details in this, and I'm sure the testifiers can speak to the issue of career lattice steps, but my understanding is essentially this is based upon the level of the child care provider's professional development that they've achieved, how much education they've attained. So depending on the level of education, the credit for child care professional ranges from $5,000 or $500 to $3,000. So it's $500 for someone who has a child development associate, and $3,000 for someone who has a career lattice step equivalent to a bachelor's degree. The third credit is for child care providers, so for essentially the facilities of the providers themselves. And that's the one I mentioned when discussing the amendment, where the amount received by the facility essentially depends on how many children that are in these sort of what Representative Pryor described as at-risk categories. So those are, if you look at the A2 amendment, it's children who are homeless, children who are in foster care, children who are in need of child protective services, children who receive funds through CCAP or through an early learning scholarship, or children who had a parent younger than 21 that was pursuing a high school degree or studying for a high school equivalency test. And again, that credit scales depending on the parent-aware rating of the facility. So it ranges from $500 to $2,000 depending on the parent-aware rating. And I can answer any other questions if members have them.
Very good. Do members have any questions? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just inquiring. I don't know all of the refunds off the top of my head, but do we do any other credits or anything in which we give more than 100% of the value of whatever they're trying to get credit for?
Are you referring to refundable, Representative Petersburg?
Refundable or any other kind, I guess.
Mr. Williams?
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, I'm not aware of another credit. I think I looked into this fairly recently. I'm not aware of another credit that has 100% credit right now.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Williams? All right. So please state your name for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Claire Sanford, and I am a board member of the Minnesota Child Care Association, which is a statewide nonprofit association of licensed child care center providers. And it's a membership organization, so you have to affirmatively join. You're not just a member if you're a licensed child care center in Minnesota. I'd like to thank Rep. Pryor for carrying this bill, and thank you for your specialization in education across all of your committees and your attention to early childhood. I'd like to thank the co-authors, some of whom are in this room and on this committee. This is a bill that we have been trying to do for several years. It's had a few hearings here and there, but things are coming together, and there's a lot of interest in it now. The National Governors Association report was referenced. The Minnesota Birth to Age 8 Workforce Strategy Group has looked at these and recommended these. There are a lot of people looking at this as one strategy we can use to attack portions of the child care crisis. And I'd just like to draw attention to what's in your packets for members of the committee. There's a one-pager from the National Committee on Economic Development, which talks about the economic impact of the child care industry in general in Minnesota. Then there are a couple resources, again, from the Committee on Economic Development, specifically around the Early Education Workforce Tax Credit. And as you heard in the walkthrough, this bill does have three credits, one for parents, one for staff, which is family child care providers or teachers who work in child care centers, and then a third one for owners of child care programs, which can be either family child care providers or the owner of a center. But most of the testimony that you're going to hear from me focuses on that middle credit, which is the heart of the bill, which is trying to get more resources to our very low-paid early childhood workforce. So we'll talk about all, but that's the thrust of it. So there are resources from the Committee on Economic Development around specifically the workforce credit part of this bill. They have done a lot of work with other states that have implemented this. And I included part of the National Governors Association report, so you can see that recommendation. And then I also put in a little bit of information, very high level background information on Parent Aware. I realize this isn't the HHS committee, and I also don't want to have an HHS hearing. I sit through plenty of those myself. But knowing that this is a tax committee and you're maybe not dealing with issues related to Parent Aware and child care every day, I wanted some high level background in there about what Parent Aware is and how it works. And we can certainly answer questions about that. So, why are we here? We know that child care plays a critical role in Minnesota's economy. There is a $2.25 billion annual state economic impact from the paid child care industry. And 73% of Minnesota kids aged birth to five have all parents in the workforce. We're in crisis all over the state. As everyone knows, we've heard plenty. Parents can't pay more, but providers can't make less. Everyone wants more child care, and it's incredibly difficult to attract and retain skilled people in what has traditionally been and is a low-wage field. Plus, we can't just create more child care just to create child care and not think about the quality of that child care. Child care can't just be parking kids someplace where parents work. As the Committee for Economic Development notes, ours is the workforce that builds brains. We need skilled, trained, and educated professionals, as Rep. Pryor stated. Most of the brain development is happening in the 0 to 3, 0 to 5 years. The neurological architecture created in those years sets the stage. It's the literal physical foundation for all future learning and self-regulation. This is why humans don't have litters of children like many other mammals. Human infants and young children need much more one-on-one adult interaction to learn and develop than other animals who show up who can already hunt and swim and run and do all that stuff. And very young children learn through interaction with adults. Anyone can watch children. It takes a lot more to support optimal brain development. I can watch TV, but that doesn't mean I know how to build one. We need brain builders. High quality early childhood programs are also the only kind shown to provide significant return on investment, particularly for low income children. It has to be a high quality program. But we can't provide the high quality that kids and families need without significant change to the early childhood workforce. In 2018, about 20% of eligible licensed child care programs in Minnesota were rated at any level in the Parent Aware quality rating system. We can and should do better. This package is unique because it has three different credits that target different stakeholders, all who have a role to play in addressing high-quality child care needs, parents, staff, and owners and operators. But as I said, honestly, the heart is the workforce support. It is targeted only to children birth up to kindergarten, and it is targeted only to DHS licensed child care programs. I've gotten some questions about what about the school-based staff who work in voluntary pre-K or things like that. They would not access this tax credit. This is for specifically DHS licensed family child care and child care center programs in Minnesota. And the credits provide overlapping and mutually reinforcing benefits. like to talk a little bit about Louisiana, which I know is not a place we normally follow.
So, Ms. Sanford, you're at about 5 minutes.
Okay.
And we do have a number of testifiers, and some that have come quite a way. So if you kind of just – and what I'm really interested in is how will this bill improve parental access to child care? How is this going to provide or help child care providers? I mean, if you – how is this credit going to make a difference? How is it going to move the dial in the child care industry? So if you kind of wrap up here in a minute or two, because I know we've got a number of testifiers.
Mr. Chair, members, it's going to put more money in the pockets of child care providers. As I said, the heart of this is the workforce credit, which is going to get tax credits that will be annually available to child care providers year after year that they can depend on as a backdoor wage supplement, really, to the low wages in the field. And I'll just say a few things about what this did to quality of child care in Louisiana. When Louisiana implemented this, over the first few years, they saw a 307% increase in owners claiming the credit, which means they were getting rated and serving more high-risk children in highly rated programs. There was a 250% increase in staff claiming the credit, and the average credit was over 1 month's mean wages, which is really, really meaningful for our staff. In the first 8 years of the credits in Louisiana, professionals achieving the entry-level certificate, which is not a college degree, it's a national certificate called the Child Development Associate, takes about 6 months to a year to complete, increased 374%, and those child care professionals earning college degrees, two-year and four-year, increased almost eightfold. And there was also a 176% increase in parents claiming the credit because there was more quality child care to choose from, and they had more resources with which to do it.
Very good.
I will stop there because I know we've got lots to discuss. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you so much. And so here's the list. I know Ms. DeVos from Ada, my home district, was not able to venture the distance, but I think, Mr. Griffin, you've got a statement to read there. You bet. Please come forward. And then Ms. Keller is on deck. Very good. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Phil Griffin. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Child Care Association, and as Chair Markward said, Ms. DeVos took our advice, and we suggested she not try and drive down in the weather this morning. I'd like to read her statement if I could, please. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Karen DeVos. I have been serving children and families in greater Minnesota for the last 21 years as a respite care and emergency foster care provider, a family child care provider, and a child care center owner and preschool teacher. While my roles with the early childhood field have evolved over the past 21 years, and the teacher and care provider that I was when I started my family care business in 1998 is far different than the one that I am today, one thing has remained steady. The early child care and education workforce does not get the professional respect or financial rewards that we deserve. Those working in early childhood care and education, regardless of how care is provided, cannot afford to make less. Parents cannot afford to pay more. We are at a crossroads in Minnesota, and I truly believe that this budget year has the potential to be the most exciting one we've seen to date for the early childhood field and the most important residents of our state, our children. The Minnesota Child Care Association-sponsored tax credit bill will provide clear incentives for quality, support continued education in the early childhood field, and encourage providers to help the children and families most in need. As a parent-aware rated facility, I understand firsthand the difficulty that has come with implementing our state's quality rating system. Parent-aware is far from perfect, but it has made incredible strides over the last 5 years. We are currently going through our fourth quality rating process. As a rated facility, we have been fortunate to receive the rate differential in CCAP and have seen firsthand what that small increment of increased funding has meant for our center. With the quality differential, we were able to increase wages to my staff slightly, and I believe that this had a direct impact on the decrease in turnover that we have seen. We have retained all adult staff for the last year and a half. Prior to that, we saw consistent turnover as people left to take jobs as certified nurse assistants and food service workers for better pay. We also have seen tremendous increases in excitement over educational opportunities. In the last year, the following has occurred. Four lead staff have completed 386 hours of training, one completed director's credentials, and all four will complete the CDA observation and testing before March 15th. In addition, two aides have gone back to school for early childhood-related degrees, and I have decided to further my education as a special education provider as well. This commitment has very little financial payoff to the amazing teachers who work in our center because we cannot pass this increased education on through increased rates to the families we serve. The tax credits for early educators, that investment of just $500 to $3,000 per teacher, would make a world of difference for them and their families. I wish this had been around when I was a family child care provider. It was so hard to further my education when working from home 60 hours a week over that 16 years. Incentives like these would have made a welcome difference, and I believe would have encouraged me to far earlier pursue my special education degree. There are few opportunities tied directly to having a high star rating through ParentAware, but what I love most about this particular bill is that you can just be starting out in the ParentAware process. You can already be building up from one star to two star ratings and still receive these tax credits. It's such a great opportunity. I also want to make sure that we aren't forgetting about the children and the families we serve. All families, regardless of their ability to pay, deserve better opportunity to have their children in highly rated programs, programs that are making a conscious effort to provide high-quality care and education. This tax credit bill provides incentives for all those serving children to become quality caregivers, even if they've already done some of the basic things that we know lead to better outcomes for children. This bill also encourages parents to choose those high-quality programs for their children to ensure that we truly bridge that achievement gap in our state. So, with that, I ask you, why wouldn't we give more incentives to providers to enter the ParentAware system? Why wouldn't we make choosing quality child care more affordable for parents? Why wouldn't we put more money in the pockets of quality child care providers, both family and center-based staff, and help retain and retain great providers in our field? Why wouldn't we help incentivize more quality providers to serve our high-risk children? Why wouldn't we support House File 1034? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin, for providing Ms. DeVos's testimony. Thank you so much. Ms. Keller and then Ms. Cunningham is on deck. Please state your name and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Cisa Keller. I'm the Senior Vice President of Early Childhood Quality Development at Think Small. Think Small is a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing quality child care and education for children in their crucial years. We do this by preparing providers, strengthening families, and catalyzing change. Here are just a few examples of what our work looks like. In fiscal year 18, Think Small held over 1,000 early childhood trainings attended by 15,000 professionals. We provided 254 child care programs with over 3,000 hours of parent-aware coaching. We administered 4,400 early learning scholarships to income-eligible children, and we published 27 new early childhood books that are distributed worldwide. I am here today to testify in support of House File 1034. Minnesota has some of the worst achievement gaps in the nation, and early learning opportunity gaps are one early cause of that achievement gap. These achievement and opportunity gaps are a threat to all Minnesotans. They are a threat to our economy, our communities, and ultimately the American dream. In addition to the worst achievement gaps in the nation, Minnesota also faces shortages to high-quality child care across the entire state. These shortages make it difficult for parents to be employed and for employers to find workers. Ensuring that Minnesota's youngest children and their families have access to high-quality early childhood education is a priority for Think Small. One way we can work towards this priority is through tax credits like those in House File 1034. Tax credits for families to access high-quality early care and education and to support the professionals in early childhood settings are a proven strategy, as you've heard. Tax credits are a recommended strategy in the 2018 National Academies of Science Transforming Financing in the Early Childhood Education Report, the 2016 National Governors Association Work Group on Compensation, and the 2018 Transforming Minnesota's Early Childhood Workforce Policy Recommendations. An essential component of House File 1034 is its connection to ParentAware. ParentAware is proven effective. Research finds that children in ParentAware programs are making significant gains in kindergarten readiness measures such as phonological awareness, social competence, expressive and receptive vocabulary, executive function, pre-math skills, and print knowledge. Low-income children make the strongest gains of all children. ParentAware participation is voluntary and based on the philosophy of building on what every child early learning professional is already doing every day through the lens of lifelong learning. We can all improve on what we do every day. To get started in ParentAware, a provider just needs to be in good licensing standing, establish a daily routine for their children, engage in families when they enroll in the program, observe a child annually, and adopt a code of ethics. And when they volunteer to do this, they are provided with a wide range of supports at no charge to them. Finally, concerns have been expressed about the parents' work participation contributing negatively to the shortage of child care across the state. Think Small recently surveyed 2,000 child care providers across the state who actually closed their doors between 2015 and 2017. There were many interesting finds in the survey, but the one that's relevant to this conversation was an analysis completed regarding parents' aware participation and the rate of closure of family child care providers during this time period. The results showed that non-parents' aware participating providers had a closure rate almost three times the closure rate of parents' aware participating providers in Minneapolis and St. Paul. In greater Minnesota, it was twice that, which makes sense because parents' aware has been available in the metro much longer than in greater Minnesota. This data suggests that there is a positive correlation between parents' aware participation and the success of a business in child care. In closing, there's not one single solution to solving the issue of access to affordable, high-quality early learning programs that are sustainable. But tax credits like those proposed in House File 1034 are a great tool in our toolbox to ensuring thriving children, thriving communities, and ultimately a thriving Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Keller. Next is Ms. Cunningham and then Mr. McMahon. And, again, if testifiers could really focus on House File 1034 and how that would directly impact and make things better in child care. So please state your name for the record, please.
I'm Cindy Cunningham. I'm a licensed family child care provider in St. Paul. I had the shortest distance to drive today. It's 2 miles up the road. I'm sorry for the rest of you. I am also the public policy chair for McPinn. There's too many acronyms, but it's the family licensed chair child care provider. That's the 501c3 Minnesota Child Care Information Network. If I could please read a quick comment from a provider from the other association that had to leave. Would that be all right?
You can, yes.
I'll be brief. Julie Seidel with MACCP, acronyms again. You should have received a letter yesterday from several associations in opposition to this bill. Many of the providers are star rated and are unhappy with the PA being skewed against family child care. Please consider the thousands of providers who are standing in unity asking if the PA system is fixed before any tax credits are assigned to it.
Thank you.
Okay, back to McPinn. We are also speaking in opposition to this bill. I will try to stick to the tax implication because that's what's most concerning to me. Okay.
Very good.
I think the intent has been stated clearly by those who are in favor of the bill. The intent of the bill is to increase quality rated programs and to reward people who have education. As a taxpayer and as a child care provider, and I'm still trying to do my taxes from last year, I think that's very disconcerting. We have this whole piece about quality is to be for targeted low-income at-risk families. To make this a broad tax for all families is disingenuous. It also pushes people into a piece where they are then potentially, not that the amounts are that great, but the potential is then that the focus is on this quality rating, of which there's 20-25% that are even participating. It's going to create that. My personal opinion and our opinion is if there is going to be a tax credit, then all families need this tax credit increase. It does not need to be based on where they place their children. So all families need this. There is pieces. I mean, the challenges are the achievement gap that's been talked about, the access to care and slots, affordability for parents, and the reported low income of providers. We believe, and see this in attacking to providers and parents, this is actually going to make all four of those worse. Families and guardians need this tax increase. It doesn't help anyone else. The majority of family child care providers are not rated. I personally am a trainer. I also, I hope no one thinks negatively, Facebook, that's our conference room. I have the only parent aware supported for family child care Facebook page that I admin and we work, and we try to help get providers rated and get through the system. It's a very disingenuous system. I personally have not been rated one time because my coach and the rater disagreed on what the qualifying wording was to be, and so I didn't get a rating that I had applied for. That is not fair to begin with, no DHS discussion at this point, except that we should not be therefore then rewarding people based on a program that we can't even reasonably attain. After 20 years, this doesn't work. Fix Parent Aware, fund Parent Aware. I live in St. Paul. I'm strongly in favor of early learner scholarships. We need to get these at-risk kids targeted. We need to help families through CCAP. We do not need to punish providers and create them to go out of business even more, which leads to the advanced degree piece. I have a college degree. Got it many years ago. It includes early childhood. Most family child care providers, I guess I don't know for sure what the statistics are, but many family child care providers have no degree. Many people working in our centers have no degree. Does that therefore then make them not a good person and a good care provider? We do not set them all in front of TVs. There is nothing that's been documented, and I've asked many, many times. When people talk about where do these at-risk kids come from, where are those not achieving, what setting are they come from, no one has done that study. If we don't know where these kids are coming from, how do you fix a problem? You're putting pressure on family child care. You're putting pressure on the centers and on the system. We're saying they should go to school. We're saying they should know academics before they need to know academics. That's the school's position to do it. Kids need social, emotional support, continuity of care. That is what leads to, every study shows, that is what leads to. So, again, to tie a degree to a tax benefit, even though I potentially would get that, is an unfair tax for the whole thing. Sorry. I go off and on my thing. You have my testimony. I really believe that tax needs to be a fair, equitable tax for everyone, not based on this. No child care, family child care provider, to my knowledge, including us, was included in any discussion of this being put forth. Hence some of the frustration of being able to discuss it. If we're going to be involved in this, which we are, we need to be able to have a voice and to be able to have a pushback against it. Children need the boost. If we raise everyone, and this is a big piece for me, and it's shown in multiple places, including on a number of the testifiers in support of this webpage, if we raise everyone, we still have our at-risk kids at the bottom. We need to target them and help them and bring them forward. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Ms. Cunningham, thank you so much. Appreciate that. Mr. McMahon, and then Ms. Jost is on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and begin your testimony, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of House File 1034. My name is Scott McMahon with the firm of Flaherty & Hood, and I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. We represent almost 100 cities across the state, ranging in size from Rochester to Bowabek, and covering every corner of the state outside of the seven-county metropolitan area. I want to thank Representative Pryor for our conversation on this bill prior to this hearing and her acknowledgement and appreciation of our concerns. We look forward to working with her and the committee as this discussion moves forward. You may be wondering why a group representing Greater Minnesota Cities is before you testifying about child care tax credits. It's because in recent years, the child care crisis has become one of the main issues negatively impacting economic expansion in our communities. We know the child care crisis is a statewide issue, but it manifests itself very differently in our communities. Across the state, the child care crisis is defined as an affordability crisis. In the metropolitan area, it means that families have an extremely difficult time affording the child care options around them. In many of our communities, families don't need to worry about affording child care because nobody is offering it at any cost. According to the Center for Rural Policy Development, between 2006 and 2015, Greater Minnesota lost 15,000 child care slots. In many of our communities, demand for child care is double what is available. A recent study by the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation found that Austin, a community of 25,000 people, lacks 847 child care slots. Stuartville, population 5,900, lacks 105 slots. Zumbrota, population 3,200, lacks 170 slots. Mankato, population 42,000, lacks 863 slots. This same scenario plays out across almost every community in Greater Minnesota. But it isn't just a problem for families trying to access care for their children. It is impacting our businesses and local economies, too. Our cities hear too frequently from employers who lose employees because a mother or father has to leave the workforce because they can't find child care. From employers who can't fill job vacancies because an employee they hired backed out and won't move there because they can't find child care. From businesses who want to expand but can't in the community because the child care shortage is a barrier they simply cannot overcome. We hear more and more about cities who are forced to build their own child care facilities with resources, frankly, the city doesn't have because it is a need their community has and nobody will provide it. In greater Minnesota, child care is more than an affordability issue. It truly is an economic crisis. We support the effort of this bill to invest in families and make child care more affordable and to invest in child care workers and providers to help them to enter, stay, and succeed in the marketplace. These tax policies have a very important and appropriate role in addressing this crisis. Where we have concerns about this bill is that it's focused on trying to stabilize the market by linking qualifying for the tax credits to the state's parent aware quality rating system. You have a handout in front of you that shows the level of participation in parent aware statewide and in the districts represented on this committee. Statewide, only 25% of licensed child care providers and 39% of total licensed child care slots are parent aware rated. And in greater Minnesota, parent aware participation is significantly lower than it is in the metro area or in the regional centers. In many of our communities, there is not a single provider within 10, 30, 50 miles that is parent aware rated. As a result, under this bill, child care will not become more affordable for families because they won't have access to a provider who allows them to qualify for the tax credit. And the provider tax credit won't help existing providers or encourage new providers to enter the marketplace because the state has yet to make the commitment necessary to child care providers in greater Minnesota to support their participation in parent aware or to provide them the training and technical assistance they need to qualify. Please know we are not opposed to what Representative Pryor and the other authors are trying to accomplish in this bill. In fact, we commend them. We need strong leadership to help the state address the child care crisis, and we are not opposed to parent aware. We know that every child in a child care setting should be getting the highest quality care they can, but we ask that in this time of crisis in the marketplace that the state focuses limited resources at the heart of the crisis, investing in families and to make it so they can afford child care and propping up the child care providers so they can operate sustainable businesses. These are the things that will end the crisis and bring new providers in the marketplace, thereby increasing access and stabilizing prices. If the state can move forward on this bill and figure out a way to make parent aware accessible and fully implemented in greater Minnesota, then we have a real solution to this problem. And we hope we can work with this committee and with Representative Pinto's committee and with the Senate to accomplish both of those two things. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. McMahon. Ms. Jost and then Ms. Van Gert is on deck.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am Nancy Jost. I work for West Central Initiative, which is one of the six Minnesota Initiative foundations. We are based in Fergus Falls, and I am the director of early childhood at West Central Initiative. I am here because I am in support of House File 1034. I support this bill because it's important to incentivize and reward early childhood professionals who are providing high-quality care to Minnesota's youngest children. It is true we have a child care shortage. It's also true that the women who provide high-quality care deserve a worthy wage. This tax credit will help with both of those issues. When parents have young children, they're usually making the least amount of money that they will in their family's life. This tax credit for parents will help with this issue. I'm from rural Minnesota. I've also been a family child care provider. And I think rural parents and children deserve high-quality child care. High-quality rural providers deserve to be well compensated, and this bill is one way to improve their compensation. We do have a child care crisis, but quality cannot be compromised in our hurry to solve this problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Jost. Ms. Van Gert, and then Ms. Strong Belial, I don't know if I have that pronounced correctly, is on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Van Gert. I'm the owner and director of Here We Grow Early Childhood Center in Mankato. Let's talk money. Let's talk about antitrust law violations. Let's talk about taxes. Let's talk about what an atrocity this bill is. If you look at the origination of the parent aware system, which a lot of people have clearly differing opinions about, I'm a 4-star rated center. Our class observation scores are higher than the national average for Head Start teachers. I wrote our curriculum and assessment tool. The Department of Human Services uses it as an example across the state for what is the best example of that. And I am opposed to this bill. I stand to gain $30,000 in tax credits based on basic math, but I'm still opposed to it because the system is unfair. It's unfair to family providers. It will not solve the child care crisis. In outstate Minnesota, I'm the only parent-aware provider in Minnesota, in Mankato. There are phone calls I get daily for people who can't access those programs. And what Ms. Cunningham said was accurate. We're not helping the kids that these funds are intended to help, including in the CCAP program, which stems from the reauthorization of the block grant and is specifically targeted to address the kids in the achievement gap. The problem in this state stems from a rigged system where you steered individuals to choose programs by incentivizing them with a program where in the CCAP program you get 15% higher payout rates for a provider who has a 3-star rating and 20% for a 4-star rating. The 2018 legislative audit report states that they can't prove these programs are more quality than anywhere else. That's called an antitrust law violation. We are living in the midst of Minnesota's largest antitrust law violation that no one seems to want to address. When you did that, when people did that, if you look at the citations and how many there were from DHS, all of a sudden people started getting citations for ridiculous things. I have 3,000 pages of public DHS data where child care centers started getting citations for things like a stick in the yard and pokey grass or rabbit poop. Yep, that was actually a thing. Rabbit poop in the yard. You have to ask yourself about the timing, you have to follow the money, and you have to ask yourself the people who are getting up and testifying, who are paid lobbyists, who they work for, and how the circle of funding is moving. Then and only then will you solve the child care crisis in this state and stop the endless cycle of a waste of tax dollars in a very, very broken, very, very purposefully intended and rigged system.
Thank you, Ms. Bangart. Ms. Strong? Lyle, and I'll have you pronounce that. I don't know if I have that correct. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. You nailed it. Sarah Strong, Belisle. I'm here today representing a group called Close Gaps by Five. We're a nonprofit focused on closing opportunity and achievement gaps in early education. We're here in support of House File 1034, specifically for two reasons, because quality helps our kids get ready for school, and quality is necessary to realize that 16-to-1 return on investment that you heard Ms. Sanford mention earlier. That figure comes from the research that Dr. Art Rolnick did while he was at the Federal Reserve. Dr. Rolnick is on the Close Gaps by Five board, so he wanted us to be sure to mention that 16-to-1 return only materializes when you're investing in quality programs. I also would like to direct your attention to some written testimony that was submitted from Barb Faber, who works on the White Earth Reservation as their interim education director. She speaks directly to her experience on the reservation working with early childhood and paranoia specifically, and we think her voice is very important. She helps consult with Close Gaps by Five as well. I just want to echo what Ms. Sanford, Ms. Keller, Ms. Joseph all said. We think this is a very important bill. It is one piece of a much larger effort that we're all working towards this session, which is improving both children's access to quality programs and also addressing the child care crisis both in the metro and greater Minnesota. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Strong-Belisle. At this time, is there anyone else that would like from the audience, before we go to member discussion and questions, anyone from the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 1034 as amended? Anyone else who's testified? And I do appreciate all the testifiers coming from very great distances today to testify on this bill. So, members, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think it's very evident that we need to provide a lot more slots, as that the term that is used for child care providers. And one of the things that I want to refer to is actually in tax policy. And so there are a couple of red flags that I just see here that I think are worthy of discussion here. One is the tax policy idea that we give a refundable tax credit for more than what the expenditure of the recipient of that tax credit actually expends. That seems a little contrary. I mean, just think about it. If you go to the extreme, and I understand this is an extreme, if you have no taxable income because of other deductions and so forth, and you have a four-star rated program, you actually could go out there and borrow money to pay for it and then get not only that paid back, but then income on top of that for a program that's there and should be available to everybody. On top of it, we're dealing with a situation where there's a limited access and limited number of people that are rated there. And so does that tax policy actually then increase the quality? Does it increase the number of spots available? And I don't see it happening there, which kind of is the same concern that I have about the educational piece. When you want to move from a star rating from one to the other, you need quality employees there as well. And to have a lower reimbursement or a lower credit for those that are struggling to increase their program rating, you're actually creating a bigger deficit for them to work with. So I'm concerned that whether or not this actual bill and the way it's done is actually going to provide the results that is desired, because we also, none of this in here, bill that we see, is promotes new providers coming forth and creating a child care providing program. So really we're just dealing with the ones that we have already, and that's too few. So for me, I think those are a couple of red flags that I see, and I think we should consider them in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of thoughts as we were listening to this today. As you can see, there are some folks that are for the program and others that aren't. The ones that aren't largely represent people from greater Minnesota, where I come from, where Representative McDonald comes from, where Representative Liz Lagarde comes from. And if you look at these statistics, it doesn't do anything for our districts. In fact, it really doesn't. And so in order for this to be implemented, it's not going to do anything to solve our crisis in greater Minnesota. And that's where it's the most urgent in our state right now. The cost is $92 million. It's a lot of money, I think, and I think that we could address this in a different way to create a better solution for more folks in Minnesota. You know, starting a family shouldn't end a career, so we have to realize this is an economic development issue. But tying it to parent-aware is a requirement that I just don't think we should address right now, especially echoing some of the stuff that the coalition had talked about. I mean, that should say something. They represent 93 communities across our state and greater Minnesota. So that way I can't support this right now.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And a lot of the testimony we've heard and impressions we've heard is about greater Minnesota having a greater difficulty than Metro. And I'm not sure that that's true. I think greater Minnesota has just done better research. They have the Center for Rural Policy Studies. They have a variety of initiative funds, which were never started in the Metro area. And so they've just been able to focus, I think, more and document it. But if you look at this handout that came from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities and you skim through it, you'll see that actually my district is way below the statewide average. And so I think that no matter where you are in the state, there's inequities in access and where the investments have been made or where the access for families is. And I think it's a challenge across the entire state for us to have quality child care that adequately rewards people who devote their careers to taking care of and nurturing those critical years of brain development. But, you know, we're the tax committee, and we have to figure out, you know, And as a legislature, what is our best path forward? And we have right now, if you believe the research that I do, that says the achievement gap is most directly correlated with household income. Household income varies across the state, but it's totally related to that. The lowest income families are those who qualify for sliding fee child care assistance. There's over, as of June, there were almost 2,000 families, 1,948 families, not children, families, on the waiting list across the state of Minnesota. And I've heard the assistant commissioner of DHS said it would be at least four times that if people didn't have to wait so long, they don't even bother to sign up. And so those families are getting nothing, no help. And I really worry about those kids because I think they're going to situations that may not be the best, and they're not even necessarily licensed or anything else. The scholarship programs have a $7,500 annual cap on the benefit that you can receive. In the Metro, a toddler's Center care is $13,000 a year. Statewide, it's $12,400. For an infant, it's $17,700 in the metro. And in greater Minnesota, it's $11,232. Why would you sign up for a program that only covers half the cost when if you don't have the money to make up the other half? And so we've got some really serious problems to deal with, a really serious issue, and I really appreciate Representative Cliveren's creativity and leadership on this issue, but I think we as an entire body have to have all of our committees figuring out what is the fastest, best way to make this a statewide policy. And my preference, if we did anything, is to focus it on the kids and deal with the professionals and professional training in the budget side of the things, and look at whether or not our working family tax credit also is contributing to people's abilities to be able to afford child care. So, but I just really wanted to point out that it is a statewide problem. It's going to be wrestled with by many different committees, and I think we all have to be open to the solutions in every committee as we move forward.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would echo Representative Brand's thoughts that I don't think this is good for rural in my district in particular, but more importantly, I want to be the voice of a constituent, a friend, and a child care provider who called me in the two-hour drive during the snowstorm, stating that this really is not a good program for her and for many providers in my district, the Parent Aware program is broken. And she, many of the things that the testifier said so passionately earlier today echoes those of my constituent friend, that this would be not a good system, especially for the family daycare provider. Now, she is not listed in my district. She's actually part of my old district of St. Michael and Albertville. So she is a four-star Parent Aware. And she was just stating that many of her friends, because obviously she's in the business, right, so she's talked to many of her group of friends throughout the state and in the area, that there's a lot of time and money put into taking the Parent Aware and being a three-star, four-star, et cetera, and it doesn't pay out at the end. It's a lot of time, it's a lot of effort, and it seems to really benefit the bigger centers, as was stated in the testimony here, that the large centers and schools are really the benefactors, and it does nothing really for our rural districts. Matter of fact, it will harm the child care industry. And she was also stating that because of DHS's work in the last few years of investigating, reporting, and making it difficult for businesses to thrive in the child care, that many of them are closing down because of that. You heard that there was a testimony, someone was written up because they had rabbit dung in their yard, and that is true, that DHS has made it difficult for these to thrive. Is it true then if the large centers and schools are already given a four-star rating? Is that the case? I'll have to ask that for someone who may know, maybe the bill author, that those bigger centers are easily,
I think they are
already given a four-star because of their talent or their size. So already the smaller family child cares are already a disadvantage because the large schools are already given a four-star from the start. Is that the case, Mr.
Well,
Chair?
I'm going to ask Ms. Sanford very quickly. Is a big facility automatically given a four-star rating?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no. The only automatic ratings are for school-based voluntary pre-K programs and School Readiness Plus programs, which would not benefit from this bill because they are not DHS-licensed programs. And Head Start programs get an automatic four-star rating from DHS, from Parent Aware as well. All family child care providers and all licensed child care centers have to go through a rating system. There are no automatic ratings for any DHS-licensed child care providers other than Head Start. And then the school-based programs do get the automatic ratings.
Thank you very much. Representative McDonald.
So then just, and I'll close, so the, in Head Start and the school-based, would they benefit from this bill?
Ms. Sanford?
Mr. Chair, members, if the Head Start is licensed, which I believe many, I don't know if all of them are, I'm looking at some of my state friends. Not all Head Start programs are licensed, but many of them are. So those licensed by DHS would benefit from this bill. But school-based programs that are not licensed, that are taking their funding through the Education Committee for things like voluntary pre-K or School Readiness Plus, they are not included in this bill.
Representative McDonald.
Can I ask Mrs. Cunningham the testifier question?
Certainly.
Let me.
Please come forward, Ms. Cunningham. Proceed with your question.
Ms. Cunningham, to your knowledge and your expertise in this industry, I am not. I'm a photographer, not a child care provider. In your expertise, do you see that this would provide some of their bigger, larger schools and Head Start programs as well? Can you comment on that?
Yeah, Cindy Cunningham, licensed provider. The schools, the Head Starts, if it's not under DHS, no. The comment, though, about centers being automatic and family child care kind of being on a level playing field is absolutely not true. Centers have staff. Centers have multiple ways. One center system can get licensed and star rating for multiple setting locations. I have a me, myself, and I do everything in my house. I have to do all of the paperwork, do all of the processing. So automatic for centers, no. But their system and ability to get rated, and if they're accredited or other things, which many providers are not, because there is no financial incentive for us to do all of these other things, we have a much harder road to get parent aware rated than what the centers do.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. Thank you. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I did want to thank Representative Pryor for bringing this forward. This is child care, and child care affordability is something that I talk about all the time. So, just so folks know, I've recently gone through having kids in child care. I've gone through this struggle, and you know, as Representative Loeffler had stated, you know, actually in my district. Families are paying much more than that to have even a four-year-old in a five-day-a-week child care. Is you're looking at $20,000+ a year. So this idea that you're somehow not going to meet the max credit of $2,100, I mean, that almost makes me laugh out loud. I paid more than that in 1 month for two kids in child care. So you know, and as we were preparing for this hearing and I was looking at this, I'd signed on to your bill because I think this is a great idea and a great program. And then I did want to point out too that the parent aware system, you know, it's, you know, just to be clear, we have a couple handouts about the parent aware ratings and how do they work together, and they're supporting providers using best practices. And I think that's something that we want to be doing statewide. And, you know, you can talk rural, metro, suburban, but I mean, we have testimony from folks in rural Minnesota who do support this plan. So I think, you know, kind of staying across the board, this is not going to benefit rural Minnesota when we have a powerful letter from an education director on the White Earth Reservation is really important. And I think to me too, if we're going to be spending tax dollars, the children, so does parent aware work? Two rigorous independent evaluations found that children in rated programs are making kindergarten readiness gains, with low income kids making the most significant gains. Why would we not want to encourage that for all kids? You know, so instead of saying, oh, this wouldn't work, why don't we look at finding ways to get more programs in rural Minnesota parent aware rated? I mean, it sounds like, you know, there's coaching provided, and, you know, the one star level is not, you know, if you actually look at what's required to get there, it isn't really that much. And so if we need to put more money into helping programs get those stars, that star rating, then I don't see why we don't do that, because I think if we want our dollars to be well spent, dollars spent on getting kids to actually make those gains and make up those disparities is where we want to go. So, you know, I wanted to weigh in as someone who, and my youngest is in a school-based pre-K program, so I wouldn't personally benefit from this anymore. And I think that's one of the challenges with child care, is that the parents who are most affected, it's a short, relatively short-term time, and when you're living it, you're the least able to advocate for these things because you've got little kids at home and you're exhausted and you're trying to work, and you know, it's and then by the time you're past that part in your life, you know, you maybe aren't as motivated to dig into fixing the problem. So I really appreciate Representative Pryor as a grandma recognizing that how important this is, and I think I hope that our committee will not will make sure that we include some kind of child care piece as we're putting together what tax policy should be going forward. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. And members, without objection, what I'd like to do is the bill that I have up on House File 540, I'd like to defer to another day if that'd be all right, so we could continue debate until 9:30 if need be. But I do want to ask, is there anyone here in the audience that came to testify on House File 540, the consistent election bill, or anyone? Anyone that drove, yeah, especially drove a far distance, I should say, to testify on House File 540. What's that?
It is because of the snow.
It is only because of the snow. Otherwise, I think this place would have been packed on that. So, okay, so hearing none, we will move that so we can continue with the debate, and then we'll finish things up by 9:30, of course. So thank you, members, for that. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for letting this bill come forward just for the discussion. And Representative Pryor, thank you for bringing it forward. Minnesota is one of the top states in having their only or both parents working outside the household. So think about that. One of the top states of having the only or both parents working outside of the household. That means, obviously, our kids need child care, and that child care needs to be quality. And that's why it's so important that we are looking at trying to figure out all the myriad of ways to make sure our centers are quality. Parent Aware is one of those methods. And you know, we do a lot of stuff with tax incentives here and state money, and we do want to make sure that there's some accountability and quality tied to those. I was looking through the standards, and I'll only mention this because I know we don't want a healthcare debate here, but the four-star quality indicators, one of them is 50 hours of training and school readiness, but that can be done over 5 years. That's only 10 hours a year of being school readiness. That can actually count towards your license as well. So I know there's a lot of discussion about whether or not Parent Aware is too onerous, and that's for another day, but I just want to stress the fact how important it is that we think of our child care centers as quality education for our kids, because that's where they're starting. That's where they're starting their education. It is still, I am convinced, since I've done advocacy work for 14 years around early childhood, it is the biggest bang for our buck that we're going to get in closing the achievement gap. It just is. So as we're looking at trying to figure out policies to make sure that not only that child care is affordable, that we're giving parents a break, because it costs as much as a college education to put your kids in child care. And that goes, for fact, across the entire state. Doesn't matter where you live, it's expensive. And it's necessary if we want to have an economy that's growing and people in the workforce. So I just wanted to thank Chair Marquardt for bringing this bill forward for discussion. Representative Pryor, we have a crisis in front of us, and when you have a crisis, you need all hands on deck, you need all ideas on deck, and you need to have these thorough discussions. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm just going to kind of reiterate the fact that today the crisis is actually in the number of spots available for access, and we've heard quite a few that we're looking at maybe 20-30% of the kids don't even have access because we don't have the daycare providers out there. And so my food for thought is, can you imagine what would happen if we would take the same $90 million that we want to invest in a finite number of spots that isn't going to accomplish everything, and actually put it towards New Start programs that would actually start new daycare providers instead? That's where we really need to do, because we can talk about quality all we want, but if kids have no access to get there, it doesn't help. We need to provide the opportunity for them to actually have daycare, and I think tax policy that should be really developed towards providing more of what is needed, not just dealing with what's already too short, my opinion.
Thank you. Representative Brown.
Yeah, just a couple of comments, too. I feel strongly that the STAR program itself within Parent Aware is a situation in which we're telling parents this is a one-star center, and then also there are four-star centers in the community. Where do you think the parents are going to go with their kids? We're talking about the most valuable thing in their lives, their children. They're going to try to go to the four-star. They're not going to go to the one-star. And so if I'm a one-star provider, would I even advertise I'm a one-star provider, especially in greater Minnesota when there are 80% of the providers that are zero-star providers? It just doesn't make any sense. This incentive doesn't give them enough incentive to want to be a part of this program either. And so we've got to fix Parent Aware. It's clearly an issue. There's a stratification issue. I would put forth a suggestion that instead of we have 1 through 4 stars, we make it just similar to what our Star Cities program is. Either you are or you're not, and that's it. The second thing is providers. I mean, I'm not a provider myself, but I'm a parent. When I go home, you know, you take care of those kids 24 hours a day or as much time as you've got them in your care. You don't have time during the day, if you're watching kids, to go off and do paperwork. You're not going to do that during the time you're watching your kids unless you hire somebody else to do it while you're doing this paperwork. I get we need to have something that proves we're getting something out of this. We're giving some tax dollars towards the program, but I think we also need to reduce the paperwork. We need to reduce the workload for our providers. The bottom line is, in Mankato, a community that I represent, we're short 863 people or slots right now. We were short that many yesterday and a year ago and 2 years ago. This won't do anything to solve this issue. It will not do anything to solve this issue. What would do it is if we were to, just as Representative Petersburg did, say, and then something that I have put forth in a bill, $10 million for new centers, $3 million for new certifications, for new trainings, for new appropriations to get folks to have their homes ready for the daycare provision. That's $13 million, and that's a good start. This $92 million number isn't going to do anything for Mankato, a community that I represent. So I just don't think that this will be something that I can support right now. And if we get rid of the Parent Aware and we just tie it to parents in general, I would be in favor of this. And I guess the last thought I would say on this is we want kids to have quality daycare. I get that. We also have a very big economic development issue. We've got 863 slots that are empty. How are those parents getting to work? How are those parents going to the jobs? How are the employers finding the quality employees or attracting them to the city of Mankato if there's no daycare for them? Those are big issues we have to address. We have to address them. The Center for Rural Policy and Development said this was a crisis in 2016. And so now we're in 2019, 3 years later, and we're still talking about ways to provide a great quality benefit to our students, for our young children, but at the same time, we're not doing anything to address the economic crisis in greater Minnesota.
Thank you very much. So I'm going to go to Representative McDonald for some quick comments, and then I'll have Representative Pryor finish it up. So,
just Representative Grant McDonald is absolutely right. The Parent Aware is broken. I was just notified that in DHS's evaluations, if there's an infraction, such as a stick in the yard or a rabbit turd, that they lose a star. And as they lose stars, and if this is incorrect, certainly I'll be corrected, I'm sure, they can seldom ever get it back. So again, you're picking winners and losers, and eventually those star ratings will go away if there's an infraction, and parents will go to a four-star and not the one-star. Therefore, you would assume that the unintended consequences with child care centers would shut down, and we'd have even a bigger crisis to going forward. So the Parent Aware program is broken. We all, I think, hopefully can recognize that.
Representative Pryor, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members, for the discussion this morning. I benefit from it, and I think also the legislation will benefit from it as we move forward. I can summarize a couple points. As we you know, spend time getting into the actual details of it and what it does incentivize and what it doesn't incentivize, it does incentivize more. It does incentivize more people to go into childcare as a profession, not open up a center for a couple years and then leave it. But it incentivizes over the long term someone choosing child care, someone staying with child care. And it also incentivizes something that is our responsibility as representatives, is to make sure that our tax dollars, whatever policies we build around that, and these resources that we take from taxpayers and then redistribute to taxpayers, that those are always targeted and focused and has the highest level of accountability for what we do with them. And what we're saying is a child care programs and evaluations that promote that. So right now we have a program called Parent Aware, which we are always improving and evolving with. It's not a static thing where it's not changed, but there's other parts of our system and our government that will be improving Parent Aware and making it more accessible, easier to use, and that more programs can be part of that. So so as I said in the opening statements, we need lots of attack points on this. And this is one of the attack points. It's not going to be done in isolation of the other things, such as improving the Parent Aware program. And a lot of those things will be heard in other committees, including the Chair Pinto's Early Childhood Committee, which I'm also a member of. And so we will hear these issues again. But let me just conclude by saying, you know, as all of us have heard in so many different contexts and so many different ways, we need to target our dollars on quality programs. And we have to do those things together. And that's what this piece of legislation aims to do, and appreciate the discussion this morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Byron, thank you so much for bringing this important bill forward. Members, thank you for the discussion. Testifiers, thank you so much for coming in today. It's a very important issue, and you know, this is one option that the Tax Committee can consider among many that will be out there from all sorts of committees. So, Representative Joachim renews her motion to lay over House File 1034 as amended for possible inclusion into the tax under this bill. So, thank you so much. Members, anything else for the good of Representative
Erickson? Mr. Chair, do you want us to keep 540, your bill, in our folders since it's already been prepared?
Yes, please. You can frame it. You can laminate it. But you should maybe keep it, Representative. A very important bill. With that, members, we are adjourned.